are live for real.
Okay, this was take two. I'm sorry. The first time we did
it's okay. They don't need to know we had to take one. They don't need to know that. They don't need to know that.
We recorded a whole hour podcast and then we were like,
Yeah.
Okay. It was like 2 minutes, maybe 2 minutes, and then we realized,
beautiful.
Yeah. We're still new. This is our third live, by the way. Third live.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, we're doing well. We're doing so well with the episodes, so well, and you know.
What episode? What episode, man?
I'm not going to fuck up when I say this. It is episode number 48.
48, yes. Yeah. The first time we fucked up, by the way. So first time. We did fuck up the first time. Anyway,
he's got zero belief.
He got podcast episode 48, man. Super excited about it, man. Super excited.
Absolutely.
So like, what's before we bring in our guests, what's going on, man?
I went to Bangalore. I recently went to Bangalore to perform stand-up comedy. Okay.
Woo.
I decided I gotta go to Bangalore. Okay. I told myself that, listen, man. It's been a while. I'm doing well in Mumbai. I'm opening for some big comics. I'm getting the recognition. People are starting to like me. I said, hey, let me just go to the city and just revisit, because you guys already know. You already know. I had so many connections that we had Shankar on the podcast. We had, you know, Arnab on the podcast. We had such great episodes, and I had to see all of them. Also, check out those episodes.
What about Kieran? Kieran on the podcast?
Yeah. So, Kieran as well. Kieran as well. We had Kieran on the podcast. By the way, check all those episodes out right now. Just go click it and watch it. I had to go to Bangalore, and guess what? I met Arnav. I collaborated with Kiran Kumar. Mm-hmm. I did. The video is going to be out really soon. But the fact is, I went there, and it was just a different feeling, because you know that when you have a tighter material and you're just prepared, when you're going to go the second time, like you just worked really hard on your set, you just feel that people are just going to appreciate you. And Bangalore is my birthplace. I have said this again and I say it again. It's my birthplace, and that city means a lot to me than anything else, you know. So the audience was so good. Kevin, I did like three mics, four mics a night, maybe two mics a night. And ooh, every time I went for the mic, you know, it was supposed to be a vacation. It was supposed to be a getaway, but I'm not able to get the comedian away from me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't get the comedian get away from me. So I went to 3 to 4 mics, and the audience is so good compared to Mumbai. It is so good. By good, I mean they get intellectual sarcasm. They get that weird, you know, like crazy shit, you know. They get it. Like, you don't really have to try that hard. And very supportive audience. And that was my entire experience with Bangalore, man. Ooh. I told myself that I'm not going to spend too much time doing open mics. I'm going to, like, chill around, right? I did make a couple of YouTube skits.
Comedy bug got you, man. You couldn't do it. You couldn't just relax. You couldn't just relax on your vacation.
I couldn't. I really couldn't. Like, I went over there. My mom was like, every day I text my mom saying I woke up, because I have a habit to tell my mom when I get up from sleep, don't tell me I'm fucking childish, okay? And when I wake up from the morning, the first thing I do is tell my mom that I've woken up. All right, that's not childish. I don't want anybody of you judging me.
Dude, wait. How old are you again?
That doesn't matter. Okay, I just tell my mom that I want
you 33, 33.
I don't want anybody shitting on me right now. Don't make this a reel, okay? Dude. Fuck you. All right, don't make this a reel. I have a habit to wake up, as usual, I reveal something about myself in every podcast. I have a habit when I wake up in the morning, I text my mom or I call my mom saying I've woken up. I just tell her that, and then that's it. I did that when I went to Bangalore. So, my old does not count. It just gives me a sense of satisfaction. That's it. Just to hear a voice first thing in the morning. That's the main thing, right? To hear a voice first thing in the morning.
You are such a mama's boy, dude. You are.
I don't give a shit. I don't care. I am. I'm gonna accept that. I am a mama's boy. I am. I'm proudly accepting that position.
Well, anyway, you were on vacation doing comedy. I was also on vacation, but I did. I was the complete opposite. No comedy. I actually relaxed.
No comedy at all. Fuck.
No comedy at all. No comedy at all. Yeah, I just relaxed on the beach and just chilled and hung out, man. Me and my friend Adam, we went to Virginia Beach. Awesome place.
Virginia Beach, West Virginia.
No, not West Virginia. Virginia Beach, not West Virginia.
Just Virginia.
She's in West Virginia. Yeah, no, that's I don't think there's anything in West Virginia, actually. But yeah, so I went to Virginia Beach, and yeah, my friend Adam and I, we went like, my friend Adam is like, he's like an adrenaline junkie, right? So like, he's like that type of friend where like he like makes me like pulls me out and like does, I'm doing things that I would never normally do, but like in a positive way, right? Like I'm
right.
Like he taught me how to snowboard. Like I'm doing like you know, we went go-karting, right? I would never normally do that, but it was awesome.
You went snowboarding and go-karting?
And also jet skiing too. Jet skiing for the first time. Jet skiing, honestly, now it might be my second favorite water sport now after kayaking. Oh, I love jet skiing, dude. It was the best time.
I've never done jet skiing. I know go-karting, maybe skiing once, but not jet skiing. I've never had that experience.
Jet skiing is absolutely insane, dude.
It's like the thing. No, you like the...
Yeah. Dude, on the waves. So sick, dude. Amazing. And like the water was like absolutely perfect. It was like a little bit of wave where you can kind of get like the jump, but like not too much where I'm like scared for my life. So I'm like, yeah, it was like the perfect amount of like adrenaline. Perfect amount. Yeah.
Can you drown in a jet ski? Can you drown? If you're
right. You can fall off though. You can fall off, but like
you're good.
Handle, like you have this like wrist thing, yes. Right? And if you fall off, then like the whole jet ski like turns off like the motor, right?
Oh, you fall off, it turns off.
Yeah. It'll turn off immediately. Yeah. For safety reasons.
You should get that in motorbikes, in the local motorbikes. You know, like if you fall off the vehicle, you should the motorbike just stop working. That'll prevent accidents. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like our car. If you like get off the car accidentally, your car just shuts down when you know somebody puts you off the, you know, when you get off the wheel. That's a great thing.
Yeah.
Send us money
That's what it also so we were like walking around Virginia Beach, right? And there's this like this magician guy, right? Mm-hmm. Who was like, I don't know, like doing like magician shit, whatever. He's called like the Flaming Ginger, right? And so he like picked me as like a volunteer, right? Because he does like a lot of like, these fire like pyro like tricks, whatever, right? You probably have seen him, right?
Right.
So he wanted me to hold his unicycle, right? Dude, scariest thing I've ever had in my life, because he basically is trusting me to hold his unicycle down, like while I had to like put like my foot on the unicycle and like holding down, like he could just see me like shivering stuff like that.
Dude, wow, so you're scared of unicycle, first ghost, now unicycle, really?
Dude, he need to get like two more volunteers, man. I could not hold it by myself. There's no way. I was scared I was gonna kill this guy, man. I'm telling you right now. I can't do it. I can't do it. Like I can't hold a unicycle and like have your life in my hands. That's why I really. I can't have someone's life in my hands. I'm just gonna get nervous and I'm just not gonna be able to do it.
Oh wow! Did Jesus take the wheels?
Jesus, man. Anyway, that's enough about us. Let's bring in our bring in our guest. Seriously. So this guy. He has a full-on bio. He's better than us, man. He has a full-on bio. He's actually worked with people. So more than us, man. So let me see. Let me get the bio here, man. Okay. So, guys, Jamie Campbell. Okay, he's our guest here today. He's a nationally touring stand-up comedian, screenwriter, and actor. Nationally touring, man. That's huge, man.
That's very huge.
I've only done like comedy in like three states. He's done it like in so many states. So
he's rich.
He's done 30 comedy and fringe festivals. His performances have earned numerous accolades, including Best of Fringe honors in Kansas City and Tucson. Best stand-up or variety performance by San Antonio's Bexar Stage and Chicago's best stand-up comedian by the Chicago Reader. Whoa, like that's cute. I'm going to Chicago, by the way, next month, so I'm gonna verify that, Jamie. So
you're gonna use his name to get some gigs, you know?
Oh, yeah. And he also has an album.
Oh, so wow.
Tell Me You're Proud of Me, which debuted at number one on Amazon's comedy charts, man. So, I mean, everybody's praising his solo show, Big Dad Energy. And one review called it, possibly the most positive stand-up act in existence.
Positive? Wait, is he clean? Sounds like a clean comedian. Just saying.
I don't know. We can ask. He's got the big dad energy, though, man. So maybe.
All right. You love dad jokes. You like dad jokes.
Yeah. Let's give it up for Jamie Campbell, everybody.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
What's going on?
Oh, man, not much. I'm psyched. You guys made me sound like I'm so much more important than I really am.
You're so important. You're more important than us, man.
This is my basement that we're, like, you're seeing me from. This is my bunker. I built this because in COVID, my wife, who is the one that really makes the money in the household,
of course,
my home office, because she used to leave, and then I would pretend to work in the home office. I would just basically sleep till noon. She doesn't have to know this. She's at work. But then suddenly she's working at home.
Yeah.
So I had to turn the basement into my office so she could work in our upstairs space. Yeah.
Yeah. Blink twice if you're in trouble, man, because you're in a basement, right?
So, oh, yeah. I am in a basement, but I'm a captive of my own self. I'm holding my own self hostage here.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I'm psyched to be here. You guys mentioned so many good Chicago's in my mind. It's such a long time ago. I was named the best stand-up comedian in that city a decade ago, which makes me feel so old.
Woo!
Wow.
So, yeah. So you go there and you name drop me. They're going to go, who? Is he still alive?
Nah. I think you're probably way memorable than you probably give yourself credit for. So
probably. I drank a lot in those days and I don't remember. So
like, I feel like we arrested him at some point.
It is, no joke, quite possible.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. Cool. Oh, yeah, man. So, wait, how long have you been doing comedy?
I've been doing comedy since 2000 and, well, stand-up since 2008. It was 2007 that I started. I moved from, I dropped out of graduate school to move to Chicago to do a full-time training program at the Second City. And it was so cool because I was working with all of these people who were just constantly name-dropping my heroes. Like, one of my teachers was like, oh, yeah, Stephen Colbert used to be my roommate. And then, like, one of my teachers was Sheldon Patinkin. He's the cousin of Mandy Patinkin, who played Inigo Montoya. And he was one of the, like, the founders in 1959 of this place. Like, he directed Alan Arkin, who just passed away, Oscar winner, who started at the Second City. And just, like, being in those hallowed halls, I remember going to the bathroom and going, like, Did John Belushi take a dump in this same toilet? And I don't know if he did, but I like to think
the
so.
Star Walk Hall of Fame, they should have like the stalls, like the stalls of fame. Right. Like, you know, like this, like John Belushi took a dump here, and then like, you know, yeah. Like,
is he a big guy?
Belushi? I mean, he was a big guy for the 70s, like physically.
Oh, yeah.
But
Chris
Farley was so much bigger. But back in the 70s, like, I don't know, maybe just genetically modified foods hadn't widened us all out as a society yet. Because, like, if you look back into, like, Leave It to Beaver, the dude that's the fat kid is called Lumpy, and he would be a dude that is perfectly svelte in modern days.
Yeah, totally. Totally agree with that. Yeah, I'm actually going to go to Second City, man. That's on my list of, like, going to Chicago. So I definitely got to go there. I love Second City.
Yeah, he's just going to go there and just yell out your name and just get a spot. That's the whole idea.
Best of luck.
So do you do improv as well? Or you
I do.
Okay.
Yeah, I perform improv and I teach improv. I started out in their comedy studies program and then went through their conservatory program where they basically teach you how to utilize improv but also to create sketch. But instead of not just writing it, basically utilizing your improv skills to create something that is
sketch comedy, like a sketch comedy, live sketch comedy.
Yeah. And I went through their writer's program, too. And as a screenwriter, honestly, the best training that I've had as a writer has been both improvisation and the writing program that I had there. But then I went on to perform at Comedy Sports and the Annoyance Theater under the direction of Mick Napier, which if you look him up, he is probably the best modern day, I think, teacher of improv, and I started doing stand-up. I remember literally the week that Barack Obama was elected.
Ooh, wow,
a lot of political that's a good there. Time. That's a good time.
Oh man, starting good time doing stand-up in the Obama years in Chicago, like it was a golden age, a golden era.
Golden age, it was. Of course. Having him around is also a golden age. A lot of things have, you know, I think a lot of difference has been made ever since he's been there, and you know, it's just a great time. Just saying, like
it was a time that we. Yeah. We stopped shouting at each other for just a few years, but now we're all just shouting at each other and nobody's listening again.
Yeah.
So.
I know someone who started the day after Trump was elected. I'm like, wow, like that's crazy.
Oh, wow.
You just need a reason to get upset. Just think about Trump.
Right, there you go.
Also, I just have a question. How did you guys meet up? Like, just for my reference, because I need to know how you guys, you know,
reached out about Kevin.
I've got a publicist. I'm a pretty fancy guy.
You got agent? Oh my God.
Well, my publicist, she helps me when I'm on tour, kind of, because a lot of times I'm going to cities, and when you're not famous, right, when you go to a city, nobody knows me. I'm going to Washington, D.C. next month. Nobody knows me in D.C. I'm going to Minneapolis in August. Nobody knows me there. I mean, a handful of friends do, but as far as the public and filling seats, you need somebody to be able to talk up what you're doing. And Tess is amazing because she's also a performer, but she's also a former news anchor, or not anchor. She was a field reporter.
Okay.
And so Tess knows how to talk to the media, and she knows how to kind of formulate your story into a hook that's interesting.
Yeah.
And she's done a fantastic job for me, which is, it's great because I'm about to release a special. We're waiting on all the final details. Woo! It's in post-production. I should have a final cut of this thing this week. And then we're waiting on my producer to go and shop it around. But even if nobody takes it as like a big streamer, or if we don't like the deals that we're offered, then we'll release it on our own.
This
is a great time.
YouTube is the second best platform. It is. It's the second biggest platform.
Have you been to New Jersey yet or no?
I actually my album, Tell Me You're Proud of Me, is released on a New Jersey-based indie rock label.
Ooh, okay.
Ooh. Nice.
They're called Mint 400 Records. And I haven't been, I haven't toured to Jersey yet. It's on my list. I've been to Philly and kind of some of the areas that are close to Jersey.
Yeah.
And actually, I was in Massillon, Ohio a little while ago at a place called Crackpots Comedy Club.
Yeah, I've been there. That's a good place.
Called Crackpot Comedy Club. It's called Crackpot, like crackpot.
It combined two drugs, one a little more mellow and one a little more intense. You put them together and you've got Crackpot, which basically evens you right out.
The guy who runs it is a really great guy, though, man.
Yeah, Chris Kettler's a great guy. Real nice guy. He actually, I've toured before he opened that comedy club. He used to run some independent shows, and every time I would tour out there, he would have guest comics stay at his house. So I've legit slept in. He's got a kid, but he's not a full time custody holder, and so you sleep in his kid's room.
It's a
bunk bed, which is weird. I'm too old for that.
Nice.
That seems cozy. That seems ideal.
Ideal. I wouldn't say that's the dream that I had when I started.
You got like little Power Rangers in the room and stuff like that. You know.
It's absolutely. It's like it's Spider-Man, and then the first time I stayed there was something like written on a wall that was like, "I hate Justin Bieber."
I hate Taylor Swift.
You get thrown right in jail around here if you say that.
Jamie, do you like Taylor Swift?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not too cool to admit that those are some catchy songs. They get stuck in your head.
Thank you.
All right.
Kevin, you got two wins.
And Shady, just shake it off, all right?
Shake it off, and Shady. Shake it off, man. And Shady's a hater. He hates Taylor Swift, though. So
it's all right. You're going to come around. I'm going to save a blank space. We'll write your name.
Go ahead. Keep all the puns. Yeah.
I don't hate the person. I just hate the artist. There's a difference. All right.
It's okay. This is the era that you're in currently. But
exactly. Keep throwing them out, man. This is why Jamie, man, is the national touring comic, and we're not, man. See? So
but you know
because
you
like
I still host an open mic when I'm in town, when I'm not on the road.
I still
produce some local shows. One of the biggest things that I think is really important is how we lift other people up. There's nothing that feels better than being of service to other people. And to me, it's one of those like what goes around comes around. And when I started trying to help comics without any reciprocation in mind, it's like, I'm going to help you. I'm not going to worry if you turn that around as you get successful and give it back to me, because I feel like it's going to come in some other way. And I'm trying to help people the way that I wish that comics that were a little higher up or more, farther along in their career would have done for me when I started.
Right. Oh, yeah. Like, there's been so many comics that have helped me, and that's ultimately why I'm trying to get, like, a venue to host like an open mic, but that's ultimately where I want to kind of, like, start, like, pushing that, like, because to me, like, I know so many people that, like, I feel like maybe, like, five or six people who, like, started comedy after me. It's like also my dad does stand up as well. So
oh really?
Yeah. Well, his dad is more. Well. His dad is way more funnier than him.
Okay, don't
way more funny. No, way more funnier. Not funnier than Eric, shout out to Eric Carrier. Very funny guy. Very funny guy. Mm. Very funny mom too. He's got a funny mom as well. Mom.
So, wow. Yeah. But, like, he's not funnier than me, Jamie. Don't believe me. No.
When I first started doing comedy, my dad was convinced that it was his sense of humor that I had inherited. Every time I would go to visit him, he can't. My dad cannot handle silence. He's somebody that has some issues. He can't take it. And so he's constantly making jokes. But when he'll make a joke, if you don't audibly give him a reaction, he will turn and stare at you. You'll be looking away. You can feel his glare across the room, and he will not stop until you acknowledge his joke.
Yeah, I can just visualize. I can just visualize certain comics on the stage hating on the fact that audience doesn't give a response. You know, that kind of comedians. We're seeking a validation regardless. So, but it's okay. I think is your dad an extrovert? I just want to ask you: is he an extrovert?
It's insane how extroverted he is.
Oh my god! I knew it. I fucking knew it.
It's exhausting.
Because are you an introvert or extrovert?
I'm an extroverted introvert, I think.
Ambivert? Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm good. I'm good.
All of the stuff that we do with, like when I'm not on stage or like having a conversation like this and it's turned off, I am just quiet. Usually before a show, everybody's messing around doing bits, and I'm just sitting there. I'm like, I'm not going to waste my energy. For some people, that's warming up their energy. For me, I'm going to walk out on stage depleted.
I'm very quiet before I start, actually, too. So
Surprisingly, I have kind of adapted to this technique where I normally talk to people or comedians. Like, I do that to be in the mojo. Right. But lately, I've been genuinely trying to, you know, if I'm doing my set or if I'm doing my shit, I genuinely just shut up and pick a corner and just keep saying what I want to say again and again and again. Like, have my mental peace. Even if I'm not talking to anybody, I'll just sit and have a cup of coffee, but just have zero interactions. I'm practicing that. And I'm just grateful that this is just a technique comedians are doing, and I'm inheriting it because I have a need to socialize. Like, this is just something which Kevin knows. I have a need to talk to people regardless, right? So I walk up to people and start a conversation. So even if I'm going for a show and I don't know them, hey, what's up, man? How are you? Where are you from? What are you doing? This unwanted. I just start,
and they're like, I don't have any change. Just
right. They don't say change. Normally they give a finger, but I've genuinely started taking some few tips from introverts or ambiverts to like not socialize too much. And believe me, it has impacted my mental health. It's just a great thing because I'm a hardcore extrovert. That's why it's just overwhelming.
Oh, wow.
Loud dude.
Yeah. Any social interactions I have, I'm also going to sit there the late part of the night once I've gone home, and I'm going to replay them in my head. Yeah. And then be like, you stupid idiot, what did you say?
Yeah.
Do you do the same thing after your performance as well?
Thing, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the adrenaline's running. The thing, right after a show, if it's a great show,
right,
I can't sleep because I'm replaying how it went and I'm
right.
If it's a bad show, I can't sleep because I'm replaying it and going, this is what you should have done. This is how you should have reacted to that moment. Oh, you stumbled on this word. This is what you should have done.
It's so true. You just kind of, how do you know? My friend calls it, this is my friend analogy. My friend believes that if you do something like that, you're just self-sabotaging your efforts you already put in. That's what he believes in. And I'm like, no, it's not self-sabotage, you dickhead. I'm just trying to process what I've just lived through to make it better the next time.
Yeah,
you know?
Athletes watch the gameplay. They watch the footage.
Yeah.
The trick is to not do that while you're on stage. Because if you're sitting there thinking about something that happened, a poor interaction, I mean, you still have to know that it happened because the audience was there in that moment. And there may be an opportunity later to respond to that or to do something based on that. But if you're sitting there beating yourself up over a moment that happened or celebrated in your head over a joke that killed, then you're not in the moment.
Yeah, you can't do it.
That's the reason I was just telling Kevin, can I bring this in if that's okay? What I just told you. So I've this is something which something about me which I've been trying to do. That's why I believe that I never over celebrate, or I never get over excited, or I never look something as an over accomplishment. I always try to keep it like a it happened, good, move on, do better next time. That's it. I would never like hype it up. The reason why I do that is because part of me feels that, you know, too much of appreciation of your accomplishment of what you already done, and you know, if you get some shit in the future, it just bums you out. It's just like, so always don't go too hype up on your accomplishment. Have a set of, like, you know, a little bit of you know, like, awe at the back of your head going, yeah, I'm happy, always, but I'm still happy.
You're always skeptical, yeah. Basically. You're
yeah. Okay. I don't over celebrate. I just celebrate. That's it. Like, just basic. So, I mean,
the thing is, if you're great, other people are going to do the bragging for you.
Exactly.
You don't need to do it yourself.
Thank you. You're right. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And so lately,
basically what you're saying is, Jamie, you've not slept at all, because it doesn't matter if you're going, whether good or bad, you just not slept at all.
Yeah.
You know what helps me is like meditation and finding good things to wind down. This is comedy's a career that you can so easily go down this terrible path. Like, honestly, I used to self-medicate with alcohol after shows because I needed to shut off that voice inside my head. But now I try to find other things. Video games late at night is a thing that really helps me wind down. Just basic things that can get my mind focused on something else. If I'm going through this castle trying to save the princess, I'm not focused on how my set went.
Damn. Yeah, you got to focus on the princess. That's it. Get the princess. That's it. Nothing matters.
Her life is at stake, okay? I can't be worried about my puns. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wait, what video games do you play, Jamie?
I do a lot of different Mario games. I got the Switch in lockdown and Super Mario Odyssey. I played a bunch.
Zelda?
Breath of the Wild was too much for me. Like, I don't have the patience to go and make a recipe with 13 apples or whatever. I didn't play Zelda so that I could cook for the homeless guy in the woods. I don't need that. It was too big a world for me. So I think I might get into some of the newer stuff with Zelda, because I used A Link to the Past was my jam as a kid. Mm-hmm. I played that over and over again. Now I'm playing Paper Mario, the Origami King.
Yep.
Ooh, nice. This is a quick in. Did you happen to catch the trailer of the new Spider-Man 2 movie game which is coming out, the Spider-Man 2 game?
I did not. You know what? I've never watched a trailer for a video game, I don't think.
That's basically the selling point of any franchise, because they put so much effort in cinematography, and it's like practically watching a fucking movie. So the new Spider-Man, Sony just came out for the PS5, Spider-Man 2. Which is after Miles Morales, if you've heard of the previous game. It's a continuation, and they're hyping it up so much, I swear to God. So that's the thing right now running all over the internet. So that's what I wanted to ask you.
I hope I live long enough to get to this merging that we're inevitably going to get to, where video games and movies are the same thing, and you just get to be a character in the movie.
That would be crazy. Yeah.
But like, your choices actually affect everything. You're not just reciting the lines.
That's true. Like a Black Mirror episode. Shit.
Yeah. Right? Oh my god!
Not the Black Mirror. It's like one of my favorite shows. It's a great show.
Oh yeah.
Have you watched the new season? I haven't yet.
Oh, it's so good.
I've never watched it. Maybe I should watch it. I've not watched it.
Watch it. So. It's a great show. So.
Yeah, I was watching. I'm currently like talking about Apple. Did you come across Apple's new gadget which came out, the Vision Pro, the one they talked about?
I know of it. I actually, the first time that I ever heard of it was in this. There's this big law firm that hires me a few times a year to come out, and I do their training videos. Right. So basically, like, businesses will hire them to do these videos, and I'm like the guy that comes in and does the sexual harassing or says something that is racially insensitive, and then they go, here's what not to do.
Yeah, you do what not to do. Yeah, exactly.
One time, they were having me play a racist character, and they always give me the script, you know, and so I learned the script. These aren't my words.
These are the words,
and I like to think that I'm doing some good and making workplaces better. Right. But one time, they were like, just riff some racist stuff, and I was like, no.
Can we put that on a t-shirt? Put that on a t-shirt.
So no, if I'm saying something racist, you're going to give it to me. That's going to come from your brain, not mine.
Yeah. It's like, you have something like, you know.
Here's something. Yeah, here's something over there.
Yeah. You're not on camera, I think.
I swear to God. I'm just wondering how many cups of caffeine have you had before the podcast? Or is this your natural energy?
Oh, just this one.
Big Dad energy, man.
I got that Big Dad energy. You know, it's
Big Dad energy right here. Wow.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the Big Dad energy. What is it about? Like, a little bit about what is it?
Yeah, it's basically it's an hour stand-up special that I'm touring the show across the country, but we've already filmed the special. We filmed it last November, and Dylan Edward Allen, who started Block Party Films, he's great. He does a lot of true crime stuff right now. I actually met him when I was doing reenactments for a documentary that he was doing, where I was playing a terrible, basically a real life predator. So he was used to me like doing this very dark, dramatic stuff. And then he and his wife came and saw Big Dad Energy when I debuted it at the Kansas City Fringe Festival. And he started off working like on the production side for America's Got Talent and American Idol. He's worked on Treme on HBO. And a lot of really cool stuff. And then he started his own production company. They're also doing a great true crime podcast that's coming out soon. But he decided after seeing the show, he's like, I want to produce this as a stand-up special. And he's got some connections with some streaming companies in the industry, including some kind of some producers that have done some really cool stuff. So he came in, and then my friend Jacob Allen Clark, who's an amazing 26-year-old director, we brought him in to direct. And we brought in this whole team of fantastic filmmakers who are working all over the place. Our AD had just worked on Killers of the Flower Moon with Martin Scorsese. And they all wanted a passion project, something because a lot of them were working on things that were like commercials and things that like don't feed the artistic part of your soul. When they wanted to do this, I got the Bird Comedy Theater, this great, pretty new venue in Kansas City, to agree to donate the space. We decided to do it the night before Thanksgiving because there's no film shoots going on. The whole country's about to go on holiday, but it's also the biggest night to go out.
Yes.
Everybody's going to see their family the next day. Yeah. And they want to go and escape mentally from all of the pain that they're about to experience. And it's a great time too. If you're already here to see family, you can take your dad to see the show.
Right.
And it's essentially an hour special about the fact that I'm not a dad. And that always gets a big laugh because people don't read the description of the show. They come in and then I'm like, I'll be honest. Yeah, I don't have any. No. But I've got that dad energy.
You got the dad energy, but not a dad. Like, it's like, oh, wow. It's like an alcoholic, but not an alcoholic, you know?
Right. Well, the thing is, my wife and I, we didn't meet each other until we were almost 40. And when you meet somebody at that age, if you're not having kids and you're not deciding to have kids right away, you're kind of choosing to let the clock run out on that possibility.
Oh, God.
And I always thought that I would be a dad, but then we kind of decided like maybe we're probably not going to be parents. And so this is kind of me exploring that. Like,
but you still have it in you. It's built in. It's there. It's fucking there. Like, whether you have kids or not, it's just there with you.
When you hit your 40s, you got 4 decades of knowledge that you've learned, and something inside of you wants to pass that on. If you have kids, you can pass it on to them. But I don't have kids, so I've got to do something. And so what I ended up doing was this show where the audience kind of becomes my kids.
I think that's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. Nobody does that. This is beautiful.
And, you know, it's so funny. You guys were talking before you brought me on about like, is this guy clean? Is he a clean?
Yeah, I asked that question. Yeah.
the show's totally clean. However, I'm not averse to. I just did a short film where I'm dropping the F bomb left and right as tears stream down my face. It's a dramatic piece. But and if you listen to Tell Me You're Proud of Me, like there is some pretty graphic stuff on there. Mm-hmm. I'm cussing left and right on that one. But something happens when you hit middle age. The audience reacts a little bit differently. If you're already famous, you can go out there and cuss left and right because the audience sees your persona. They already know who you are, right? To them, you've got that. You don't need to win them over right away. They're there to see you. But when you're not famous, every show is like a first date.
And absolutely.
Anytime you meet a guy in his 40s, if he comes out and he's talking about, I was doing a lot of drugs last night. I was partying. I was having some graphic sex. Let me give you the details. Then you're like, I'm uncomfortable around this guy.
That's what I hear every single day with everybody around me.
Well, I realize audiences were responding to my material differently because I hadn't changed it. I'd been doing, you know, stand up for over a decade, and audiences were starting to get uncomfortable when I would talk about partying too much or talk about graphic sexual stories. And I realized, like, yeah, I can still talk about sex, but I can't talk about me having sex. I could talk about it as a concept. We'll laugh all day. But if I'm like, here I was having sex, and let me tell you the details, and people are like, that's a little uncomfortable and personal. You shouldn't be sharing it.
If I talk about
partying, they think, oh, he should have his life together by now. We're just sad for him. And I'd met my wife. Life was good. I was happy. And I figured my art should start to reflect that. So I threw out all my old material and started new with this show.
Wow, that's amazing. And so it's a lot of bad jokes. Like, what's the kind of material that you're bringing up?
Sure. I mean, there is plenty of sexual innuendo, plenty of like drug references. I talk about the, you know, who I used to be, how I used to party. I once saw the Backstreet Boys live at Disney World on LSD.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I talk about that. I talk about how
you're like copyright. Shut up.
It's fine. You know, they're not even performing anymore in Shady. They're fine. They're good.
Oh yeah. Oh, they performed in India and they just left. They were in Mumbai. They performed. The Backstreet Boys came down to India and they did a concert in India in Mumbai, and they flew back very recently this year.
Backstreet's back. Backstreet's gone.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think the part that surprised an audience the most about the show is I have a section where I literally go through the audience and talk, kind of doing some crowd work to a few different people and get some information about their lives, who they are, and then I tell them that I'm proud of them. And they expect me, I think, to roast them. And I'm like, I'm just going to be a nice guy. And I'm going to tell you that I'm proud of you because that's what a dad would do.
Yeah, it's nice.
So you never been in that situation when you're doing your special and you have a moment where you had to roast somebody or someone was just giving you a case, like
mean, you get people that talk back too much, or they take the crowd work as an invitation to talk throughout your entire show. And usually, what I'll realize is when I started stand up. Hecklers used to throw me off and they'd make me so mad because I had prepared this entire set. And when I practiced it, there wasn't someone yelling at me.
Exactly.
And so that's not how I practiced it. And it would just like, I would get this fire in my belly and I would be just rage. And I used to be really cruel to hecklers. Mm-hmm. There was this one time when I lived in Chicago, I was doing a show at a place that is now closed down called the Blarney Stone. And this girl just could not stop talking, and I raged on her, and the room is erupting with this mob laughter as I'm going in. I'm insulting her, and I'm saying some of the meanest stuff, and they're laughing at her, this drunk, crazy crowd. I myself probably a little inebriated because I was just so mad. I couldn't handle somebody interrupting my set. I took it as a fight, and I won in that set. As a matter of fact, people would come up to me. I remember after that specific night, and they were praising me. They were going, it was wild how you handled that person. But then I remember leaving the venue, and I saw that girl sitting on the curb of the sidewalk crying. And I was like, I never want my comedy to make somebody feel like that again. So what I do now, when I see somebody heckling, I realize, like, they want attention for something. Something's going on in their life.
Yeah.
That they need the room to focus on them right now. And I also realize I'm good enough that I can talk with this person. And that's not going to, instead of throwing the show off, that's an opportunity to make this show special for the audience. That being said, if you come to my show, this is not an invitation. They're not buying the ticket to see you talk. However, if there is that moment where somebody can't hold back, then I'm going to stop and I'm going to talk to them. And usually you give them a little bit of that and then you explain, like, cool, now we got about 30 more minutes, and I have about 30 more minutes of material that isn't planned for you to talk. However, if you're quiet now, come see me after the show, and we'll chat it up again. It's been so great. Give a round of applause to Jeremy or whoever, you know?
Yeah.
That's a very beautiful tactic. It's such a beautiful tactic. Like, it's like you're not being a dick. At the same time, you're getting your way, and you just gain respect, period.
Exactly. Well, here's the thing that happens. You fight
about
a heckler.
Being in control, but also like not being a dick.
Kindness is a radical act these days. And if you treat somebody with kindness, then that whole room is going to feel better. Even if the show does get derailed a little bit, they're having a good time and they respect what you did. You ever sit in a room with some people that you don't know very well and they get in a fight? Like maybe you're hanging out with some friends and they're a couple and they have this giant argument and you're just sitting there awkward.
Yeah.
It doesn't return to normal after the fight. You're sitting there uncomfortable. So if you put a heckler in their place, that room's not ready to laugh right now. They're still feeling uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, that's super awkward. And because especially if you're like, it's like a three, like you're just with a couple and it's just you and you're like the third person and they're like in a fight. You're like,
You can't even go back to being normal. You just cannot do that. You just can't flip a switch and be like,
no, you're sitting there going, God, the marriage is over. I just saw the moment that it ended. Like, it may last for six more months, but it's really over.
It's really over in this moment right here. They're going to look back and be like, yeah,
I was there. If I may ask, can you tell a little bit about your wife? What does she do? And
My wife is amazing. She's I talk a lot about her in the show because, mm-hmm. I mean, you can't talk about that situation without talking about her. Okay. She works in data and analytics in the healthcare space.
IT? IT?
I'm a software
engineer. She handles all the stuff that is adjacent to the ad. So if when you're watching a streaming service and you have that ad that pops up, she handles all of the data of seeing like how that ad is performing.
Which helps me
when I'm going to a city. We actually just worked on some of my stuff for DC. We're like, we're gonna do a targeted ad and we're gonna do a couple of tests and see where people are clicking and buying tickets.
That's so good that your wife can actually
good marketing. That's a good marketing
with marketing. That's so
good. Marketing.
That's good.
She's amazing. Yeah. She just got roped in DC. She's going to help run my tech, and so this could put a real strain on the marriage. from my standpoint, I don't care if she messes up. You know, it's going to be fine. I'm psyched because she doesn't always get to travel with me, but when she does, it's great. It's a big deal. But DC was like, we don't have a tech person. You actually have to hire your own, and so I was like, she knows my show. She's seen it more than anybody. I was like, honey, it's just sound and lights. We turn lights on every time we enter a room. How hard can it be?
Nice.
Man, that's one supportive, really smart wife.
I'm so lucky. Honestly, I don't think I'd be alive if it wasn't for her. I'd be just a mess that has fallen apart. And now I feel like I'm thriving and things are going great. And there's something amazing about having somebody in your corner. But also maintaining a marriage is your whole life can't be comedy. Like you guys were talking about vacation. There's no way ever on a vacation I'm just going to locally find where there's a mic. Not allowed.
That's not happening. That is really not happening.
That's in shady though. And for me, I like to disconnect though. So
I did go on a vacation, but I ended up doing gigs and shit. Like I'm not able to just enjoy. Like I just took one day to just, you know, chill at a fucking hookah joint and just smoke some shit out. But I was like, I couldn't just enjoy. I have to do some mics. Like that's my way of feeling good, you know. I don't know if it makes any sense. Doing comedy even in your free time, which is not work related, but just doing it for your soul, it's kind of a vacation for me, you know, internally. And I have a peace of mind, you know. I've done something, I'm good, you know, like that.
It's the thing is, it's not a vacation for her.
True.
And so she's like, we spent all this money to go to, you know, but at the same time she's insanely supportive. And like, as soon as we get back from DC, I have a screenplay that is up for like a big prize at a big film festival that is in Reno. We're coming back to Kansas City. I'm doing a show here and then turning around the next morning. Well, I'm doing a show one day and then I'm on a film set filming stuff as an actor. And then as a screenwriter, literally that night I'm flying to Reno, getting up early in the morning and going and pitching this screenplay to investors for, you know, possibly to actually get this thing made into a movie, and then getting on a flight literally at like 5 a.m. the next morning, coming back here, turning around and driving to Minnesota. That's the kind of like,
how do you have the energy? How are you not collapsing? How are you not collapsing? That's my question.
Cocaine energy. I'm just kidding. No, not okay. I'm exhausted a lot of the time. But what does help is things like meditation. Also I make a list every day of what I'm doing the next day. Because if I have to think about everything, I won't get it done. I'll be overwhelmed by all of the tasks. But if I have a list of everything
You're the to-do list guy.
Absolutely. Because now I don't have to do everything. All I have to do is the next thing on the list. And everything else is there. I'm not going to forget it. It's on the list. As long as every day one of the items on the list is to make tomorrow's list.
Mm-hmm. True. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. I do that too. On
What's the movie about? Is it a comedy movie or is it like a drama? Like what's the
you know, it's the thing is as a comedian, I've discovered that a lot of the screenplays that I write are not necessarily in the comedy genre. I just had a thriller produced in the UK. It's a short film called Morning Sickness, M-O-U-R. And it's really dark. Morning. That's about to hit the festival circus. Or circuit, not the festival circus. It feels like a circus. this one is entitled Call Me Thor. And it is about an 11-year-old kid in 1991. He's just a chubby, heavy metal-loving kid. And he lives in an abusive home. His mom's got an abusive boyfriend. Her ex-husband, his dad, was abusive during their marriage, and he's involved in organized crime. But to escape all this stuff, the kid puts on his Walkman, plays heavy metal music, and goes to this fantasy world where he imagines he is this amazing guitar player, and because his dream is to be a rock star, so he's got enough money to take his mom out of this abusive situation. Dad sues for custody. His mom, there's no way she can afford to win the custody battle.
Yeah.
And so... she runs with him. They run away to New Mexico. They live in hiding under assumed names. Eventually, the dad and the boyfriend, they team up with a private investigator to try to hunt the mom down and find the kid. And then the kid makes a deal with his dad that he will go and live with him, but he has to turn on the mom's boyfriend to keep her safe.
It's very emotional.
That's like crazy.
It's a wild ride. It's based on me as an 11-year-old. My mom and I did legit run to New Mexico when my dad was suing her for custody. And we lived under assumed names for 6 months in hiding.
Oh, wow.
Whoa, dude. Hey, well who's going to play you, though? Who's
going to play it's, you? It's Keanu Reeves. Playing an 11-year-old. It's an 11-year-old kid.
Reeves, come to the podcast.
Right? I'll give him a call. No, it's the character that's based on me is an 11-year-old kid in the film. So
he can't play
11
year old.
I mean, he's not
right. This motherfucker is not aging. He can play any age.
I'll be honest with you. If Keanu will attach to the film, I am willing to have him be 11 years old.
He can just be a baby. He can just pop out of the thing, woman, and be like, "Yeah, I'm a child. I'll play a child."
Martin Short played an 11 or 12 year old kid in his 40s in the movie Clifford. It's freaking weird.
Oh yeah, Clifford, great movie. Never seen
it. Okay, yeah, I loved it, but you got to be prepared for a real weird movie. If you don't have a weird sensibility, it's not for you.
Nice. Good. So wait, speaking of weird, so you like Halloween's your favorite holiday. Why is that your favorite holiday?
Halloween's the best. There's the costumes. I love getting just dressed up in a stupid costume. And just hang. I love that everybody's playing, but the pressure's not there to buy gifts, to do all the traveling. People are just in a festive mood. Last year I produced the super fun Halloween show called Hellarious, where we turned the venue into a comedy club in hell.
Hellarious? That's a good wordplay right there.
It was super fun. And I just played the devil's cousin or his nephew, I think.
I like to call it my relatives, but yeah, sure.
Yeah, I love haunted houses. I have an idea actually for a haunted house that I think would be scarier than any of the haunted houses that are out there. It's called Pregnancy Scare.
Oh my god! Whoa! If you need to go inside,
I'll tell you how it works. I mean, I've got the business pitch ready. You walk in and you realize it's very expensive because you have to customize it for every person. Unless you pay your fee. You walk in and you realize it's a recreation, brick by brick, of your entire apartment. Sitting in the back of the room, right on top of a trash can, is a little box with the three scariest letters for anybody involved in a casual relationship, EPT.
And then you hear
a scream coming from the bathroom. The door opens. It's her, and she's got news. And it's at this point, this is really the selling point, because it's at this point that it turns into an escape room. And if you don't get out of there right away, you're there for the next 18 years.
I love it.
Make this a real thing. I'll
call Keanu. He can fund it.
Keanu, come on. Keanu, please and fund Jamie's idea, man. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
and then fund it and then join the podcast with him next time. Just do it. Exactly. Okay, Kevin, you got to switch up the angles.
Switch up the angle. Okay. We're going to do this?
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go. Switch up the angle. Woo.
Oh, I should have shaved my stomach. All
right. Yeah. I DM'd you saying switch up. I DM'd.
I saw that over there and I was like, I don't know what's happening. I have to bat right handed now.
You're good. No, we got to play with the camera angles with the thing. Kevin has been really kind to switch up with the camera angles. So it kind of gets a little bit more, you know, stylish. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to switch it up so people don't get bored because we're not moving.
No, we're not moving at all. Exactly. Yeah. It's not like editing or anything like that.
Just don't do that after marriage. Then that's the problem. You can switch up after
marriage. Sometimes you got to switch up the angles, you know, you hit things hit differently.
Yeah, that's fine. That makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. So, like,
you can't switch up the partners.
Oh, yeah. That's what I meant. That's exactly what I meant. Yeah. I meant that.
Last thing I wanted to ask you. So, you mentioned a topic of like a comedian giving a eulogy. Have you ever had to give a eulogy?
Recently I had to. My grandmother passed away, which is heartbreaking. I loved her so much. She was
my condolences.
Thank you. She was cremated. She screamed the whole time. But. That's a dark joke. I loved her so much. She was amazing. Actually, you know, one of the funny things that I thought was just, I loved her personality. She just always believed in me. Even when my career wasn't going great, she flew out to Chicago, followed me around to venues, watched me totally tank at this one show. And then she went to another show that was very vulgar. And it was an improv show where it was just super dirty. And there was a crowd work segment. And this one of the guys in the cast, I didn't tell him my grandma was in the audience, and he went and he looked directly at her in the show and told her in graphic detail the kind of sex that he wanted to have with her. And I'm just sitting there mortified.
Do you have a clip of that? I'm sorry.
I do not. I think that may have been what caused the cancer. I don't know. I remember in the car ride, she was driving me back to my apartment. She just told me, it's the only complaint she ever made about my comedy. She just said, you know, you can pray to Jesus about what kind of comedy you want to do. And I was like, all right, I get what you're saying. But when she knew that I was doing Big Dad Energy and she wasn't going to be around, she knew the cancer was terminal, and she knew she wasn't going to ever get to see the special live. Sure, she had me do it at her bedside. So I sat there and performed the show for an audience of one.
How was that?
My wife was next to me. So
that was the best audience ever.
It was great. It was really special. But I gave one of the there were three of us. It was me, my sister, and my dad that all kind of shared in the eulogy. And I remember I went up and it felt really good. You know, it's weird as a comedian. You get up in front of a crowd and all of those instincts kick in. And, you know, I had the room in the palm of my hand. I got some laughs. That felt really good. These are mostly strangers that knew her from kind of different areas of her life. I think I got some tears. I got heartfelt. But then at the end, it felt really weird. I was like, done. And I was like, but nobody clapped. And I was like, oh, that's not, I guess you don't clap at a funeral. And then I don't know why. Because I didn't know what to do. I was like, they're not clapping. What do I do? I just like, well, that's it for me. I guess I'm going to pass the mic to my sister.
Oh, no.
I almost went like, I'm getting the light, just like Grandma did.
Yeah.
She went into it.
I'm going to be laughing at this. Right?
I think she would have liked it. She would have laughed too.
Did you make a lot of jokes in the eulogy? Or like, I mean,
I made a few jokes. One of the big things is she used to tell me like, oh, he's an overnight success. 20 years in the making. He worked forever, but like people only see that. I think because they talked about somebody else being an overnight success early in my career. And I was like, what you don't realize is they've been working for 10, 15 years before you knew them. They weren't an overnight success. You just didn't know about them yesterday.
True. I can't do jokes in funeral because I just have one joke when it comes to eulogy. It's something which I said a long time ago. So this is one joke, okay? Yep. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the new unboxing. That's it. That's the only one. Apart from that, is all, you know, weird stuff. Like, I can't do knock-knock jokes.
Knock-knock. Who's there? Well, I'll tell you who's not here.
Yeah.
David, who died doing what he loved.
Yeah.
Not breathing.
Yeah, I would want that. Like, you don't want like a depressing eulogy.
Audience.
You
want, yeah, you want
those fun memories.
You want, yeah. Like, yeah, you want to celebrate their life.
Exactly. True, but I think some people are just bent on and just holding the respect and the silence. So it's sometimes like I feel, at least in India, I don't know about any other country. In India, when it comes to eulogy or funeral, or you know, people are very serious. Like, they would laugh and giggle maybe after they have done with the entire process, and you know, they have done with the. But then we are sitting around the room. Then somebody would, you know, cheer up as people start laughing in remembering the person. But they would never do it at the prime moment of the situation.
Oh,
but yeah. That is something which you can never see it. Even Catholic people in India, even Catholic people would never do it. Like, never. At least the Indian Catholic people would never do it. Like, forget about the other religion which we have, but even the Catholic people would never crack a joke at a eulogy or go a little bit easy, because it's very sensitive. I think it's a very religious belief. It's a religious belief. It just makes you hold respect instead of, you know, just making jokes. That's the only take I have on this, right? That's what I observed.
For me, I love that sweet spot between reverence and then, like, laughing at memories. Like, yeah, that is who that person was to me, too. At my funeral, though, I want there to be a few jokes, but I want everybody to just be losing it in tears, shaking, crying, going, we can't possibly go on.
Yeah. I love it.
I already decided how my eulogy is gonna be. I just want to be buried in a graveyard, and I just want my friends having slices of pizza and just doing cheers and just having it. That's my shit. Like, sit, bury me in the casket. Sit around the casket. Have my favorite slice of pizza. Have one each. Good cheers, and then have it. That's my type of. That's how you can remember me, because I'm a big pizza fan.
Wait. You want to be a casket? Because I would rather be cremated. I'd rather kind of just.
I love my body. I love my body. I love my body. I don't care. I don't know. It's. I mean, I'm dead. They choose to decide whatever the fuck I'm gonna do. Right? I can say what I want to say, but this is what my belief.
Jamie, how about you? Would you rather have like the buried, or you would rather be cremated?
Let's do half and half. You know, waist down. Let's cremate.
Which half is not cremated?
Which half?
I'm gonna go waist down. You know, I want my I want my genitals in an urn. You know.
Okay.
I don't want anybody desecrating them afterwards. But everything waist up. Let people see my face at the funeral. And I want a little speaker. Like, just like put it in my mouth. And I want it to, I just wanted to like interrupt people speaking, to just be like, I'm trying to sleep here.
Heckling the eulogy.
You want your genitals in the urn.
That's so funny. Oh my god.
I can't steal that. I want to. I'm not stealing that.
All right.
I'd like people to just refer to, like, yeah, there's his bottom half on the mantle.
All right.
But then you still have the grave people can visit, you know?
Of course. Yeah, you gotta have the tombstone as well. Yeah.
I don't know what my tombstone's gonna say, but whatever. You can put whatever you want. But okay, what would be your craziest tombstone message? Jamie,
I would like to say pepperoni. And the reason is, there used to be this commercial in the 80s that was tombstone pizza, like one of those like frozen pizzas.
And they would
go in, and it was like an old West person, and they're like, what do you want on your tombstone? And then they'd be like, pepperoni? I don't know. I think that's what it would say.
Kevin, what about you?
Taylor Swift's husband, Kevin.
Fucking hell.
Oh, that's fun.
R.I.P. R.I.P. Yeah.
Okay. Mine's gonna be. I'm just praying that this happens. Successful comedian still hates Taylor Swift.
Right next to each other. We'll be right next. We'll be right next to each other.
Those faces just together. Those faces.
And then when Taylor visits, she'll be so conflicted.
she'll see both.
All right, let's wrap this up, guys.
Yeah, let's wrap it up. All right,
so let's go wrap this up here. Let me get a different layout here, right?
We gotta do a different layout. Yeah. Oh, there you go.
All right,
we gotta put him in the big one.
I will. But guys, what did we learn on the podcast? I'm gonna start with Jamie.
Just start with Jamie. Yeah, start with Jamie.
You know what I learned? If I'm ever at a funeral in India, that I I need to like tone down the jokes. I don't know that I'll ever have the occasion, but if I do, I'll remember this moment right here. Yeah. And I'll make the right choice. I hope.
All right. And Katie, what did you learn in the podcast?
I learned that you don't have to be a dad to do a dad special. Yeah. And I also learned that, you know, your grandma is probably the best inspiration for comedy. Because old people bless you with, you know, beautiful stuff like my grandma, right? And I also learned that I am definitely going to do a funeral joke and eulogy joke because nobody's done it, and I'm gonna do it.
Oh boy, it'll be the first and last time.
I don't care. Shoot me right after that. I don't care. Kevin, what did you learn?
Let's see. Okay. So yeah, first off, I learned that, man, Keanu Reeves got to come to the podcast, man. I mean, you got to work with Jamie too, man. You got to work with Jamie. He has a great idea for a haunted house. Please, like, this is incredible. You gotta be able to implement it, man. Incredible. Also, I realized, man, that Jamie, man, like, I can't wait to see your special, man. It sounds like it's gonna be awesome. Like, you were funny on this podcast. I can't wait to see it. Definitely when you die. You remember this moment?
I'll send you a little bit of the ashes of my generals just as a souvenir. I'll put that in the will.
It might cost you a bit extra because they're doing overseas in India. Just saying, just a little bit.
Well, we won't tell them that's what's in there.
We won't tell them that. Yeah.
Also, he's a Taylor Swift fan, just like me. I mean, come on. Like,
I didn't get a win today. I didn't get a win. I'm so pissed off.
No, man. And then also, man, like, I mean, watching Backstreet Boys on LSD at Disney World has to be the best memory ever, though, probably.
I mean, there's a lot of it that I don't recall.
Of course. That's the happiest place on earth, honestly. LSD, Disney World, and Backstreet Boys. Happiest place on earth, yeah.
I think it's like a combo pack.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So, all right. But now, before we get off here, let's just look. We have some comments here from Sarud. So let's. we have one person commenting on us right now.
We do that one loyal audience.
We're gonna go through the comments here, and then we'll kind of like do some promo for you, man. So cool. All right. First comment. My favorite podcast is live. Okay. Woo! Thank you,
Sarud.
Yeah.
When Shady says Catholic.
Comment. When Shady says Catholic, he means Christian. He generalizes them all.
Oh, wow.
That's not true, but okay.
By the time Shady dies, pizzas and coffins are going to be canceled. Oh, snap. Okay. Well, I don't know why.
Okay. That's good. You can take it away from me. I don't care. I'm gone. You're gone.
All right. This is
An emoji.
Probably when you were talking about the your ashes, Jamie. So.
I'll send you some too.
And Katie admitted on stream that he steals jokes. Comedy police is on their way. Oh, man.
I steal jokes. I didn't say.
Oh, man. Amy Schumer. Oh, my goodness. Please.
Uh-oh.
Taylor Swift. Loves Taylor Swift. Yeah. Okay, the graveyard is going to be Kevin and Taylor and Shady in the same row. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Taylor right in the middle. Yeah.
Ooh, bad blood.
Bad blood, exactly, or no blood.
About a thumbnail about this video right now. I'm not
cancel cop on his way to shoot. I'll remember this incident. I'm glad to experience that it happened. Swifties, yeah. Woo! Okay, cool. Those are all the comments. So thank you, Sarud. All right.
Thank you, Sarud. Thank you so much.
Jamie. Where can people find you, man? And where can people find your album, too? Like, your first album.
Oh, right? Yeah. My first album, it's on Spotify. If you look up Jamie Campbell, you'll find... Spotify lists me and another Jamie Campbell as the same artist. So there's, like, this dude that a band called Jamie Campbell and the Redneck Romeos.
Ew, bro.
Spotify thinks we're the same person. It probably frustrates that dude, too. But if you go...
He doesn't want to be associated with you.
Genderizing people.
But if you go over there, you can find Tell Me You're Proud of Me there. Also, if you just go to my website, there's a link on the merch tab for that on like iTunes if you're somebody that actually buys an album, which is wildly amazing now if you do. And that's, I'd be grateful for it. But yeah, if you just go to jamiecampbellcomedy.com, and if you look at like the my at there, which is my Instagram handle, you just take the at off and then write .com at the end, and you did it. You got the website. If you pop over there, that's got a list of all my performances, and I'm going to various areas across the U.S. this year. And then, yeah, if you're on Facebook, facebook.com/adventuresincomedy. I should have made it my name, but it was things were new back then when I made the page. Or Twitter at JamieCampbell79. And then right there's my Instagram handle at Jamie Campbell Comedy. And if you go over to that website, there's a spot that you can sign up or and actually, you know, I'll send info. I'll also be posting it all over my socials when the special drops. So looking forward to that. Hopefully that's going to be released later this year. Very excited for that. And some other really cool film work in the pipeline that I can't wait to share. So yeah, find those, follow me. If you send me a quick message when you follow, let me know that you heard me on the podcast. I'll make sure to follow back. Sometimes there are some real weirdos. So I don't always follow back. But if you let me know that you saw me on the or heard me on the show, then I will follow you back for sure.
Yeah, totally.
And we're gonna have every single of this linked in the description. All details will be provided when the video drops. Kevin, when is this video dropping, by the way?
So this video is going to drop on July 14th.
July 14th.
Yeah. Right. If you're hearing that right now, then I am in Washington, D.C. So if you're in that area, come check me out at the Capitol Fringe Festival. And if you're anywhere else, don't worry. I'll get there soon.
Yeah, let me know when you're in New York, Philadelphia, New Jersey, man. I'll be there, man.
Kevin, I know what you're trying to do right now. It's fine.
I'm gonna be an audience member, dude. I'm not trying to like get spots like you. Like,
you should get spots. What's wrong with you? You gotta get spots.
If I got a guest spot available, I'll throw it your way.
Oh, dude,
please, just throw one for Kevin, please. Yes.
And JD, what we'll do is we're gonna set up just on kind of some wheels. I'll put an iPad up. Mannequin on wheels, and then you'll just stream in. We'll wheel it around the stage.
So basically, Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. That's the end of the show. That's it. I'm not.
Guys, please follow Jamie everywhere.
Please follow this guy.
Not in public.
Online is okay.
Online. Follow him everywhere. Follow us on Instagram. At the Hangover YouTube, Comedy Podcast.
On YouTube.
Follow us on the YouTube channel of the Hangover Comedy, where the whole shit is happening. Like, follow us on the Hangover Comedy Podcast. Subscribe to the channel, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. See, this is all Kevin's doing. My job is yelling. His job is technical job. That's why he's IT guy.
Also, our Patreon.
We're shooting the Patreon.
Please follow our Patreon, too. Jamie, if you have, like, 5 minutes after this, though, we'd like to do, like, another Patreon video.
This is something we have for our beloved followers.
Yeah. I'm going to show my nipples, you guys. Get ready. I'm not really. I don't have nipples. I'm, like,
You can take mine. I have, I don't know, maybe three. I don't know. Okay.
We're going all scripted on the Patreon, though. So
We're going all the script,
Anyway, thank you all so much for watching live, and also for if you watch it July 14th or after, pre-recorded. You guys are awesome. You're amazing. And please share it. Please share the podcast.
Supporting. Yes. And we'll catch you guys in the next video.
Yeah, and guys, go watch Jamie's special, man. I mean,
go watch his special.
It's not out yet.
Yes, there you go. The new one, but also watch the old one too. You prepare.
Prep
for it. You know,
check out my stuff.
Exactly. Check out all the stuff. This is Jamie.
Check out his stuff. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Check out his stuff.
Also, it's Jamie, Jamie. Don't make the mistake I did. It was just like Jamie or whatever.
Jamie. Campbell Comedy.
Absolutely. All right, guys, see you next podcast. Bye.
Bye.